Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the House Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee meeting for this February 16th. And we have two bills on the agenda, and we'll take roughly about 45 minutes for each, give and take. And but before we do that, I want to announce that we have a quorum, and the first item on the agenda is the minutes. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like to approve the minutes of our Valentine's Day meeting.
Yes, thank you so much. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. So our first bill will be House File 246, Representative Hansen. Members, you'll recall that we had the bill presentation and testimony on this earlier. We laid the bill over because there was some interest in additional testimony, amendments, more discussion, and so we are going to revisit the bill today, but the motion will now be to move this bill to the General Register, and I will move the bill to the General Register, House File 246, on its way, and to a debate. And so I'll first call on Representative Hansen just to sort of, you know, it's like the you know, when you have part two of a show, you kind of revisit the highlights of the earlier episode, and then you move into the sequel. So Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again, members of the committee, and good morning. So as a reminder, House File 246 seeks to do two things. First, it repeals the statutory prohibition on an old rail line that runs through my community called the Dam Patch Commuter Rail Line. This has been a priority for the city of Savage for over 20 years. The second piece of this bill is to repeal a similar moratorium on a line that runs through Rochester. And I won't go into all of the details. If you have any questions or need any further refreshers of the last episode, feel free to let me know.
Okay, well, why don't we go straight to our testifiers. We have Janet Williams, the mayor of Savage, and Brad Larson, the city administrator, I believe, here. Mayor, you want to start us off?
Our chair, I'll go first. Thank you.
Brad, you can go. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Brad Larson with the city of Savage, and I just want to say thank you to the committee again, Representative Hornstein and Representative Hansen for carrying this bill. I won't go into the details I presented last week, but in short, what I want to do is just say that we just want this issue to be put on the same level as any other issue that the state of Minnesota faces. We want the same ability to do research in possible solutions for the congestion we face in the Southwest or Southeast Metro. And I just wanted to point out some of the things that has been said over the past couple of years by organizations that are responsible for planning transit in the state of Minnesota, just to show the history of those responsible, those agencies responsible for looking at transit and how they view this issue. So in 2007, the Met Council lobbied for a bill to repeal the Dan Pash gag order because by repealing the gag order, it would ensure that the Metropolitan Council is doing a thorough and professional assessment of long-range transit planning needs. This was carried in the Senate and the House, ultimately did not pass. In 2009, MnDOT commissioned the Comprehensive Statewide Freight and Passenger Rail Plan, which stated the Dan Patch commuter rail line would have passed through several of the fastest-growing communities in the Twin Cities. Among the commuter rail corridors, the ridership projections would have resulted in the highest annual ridership, and it should be reexamined. In 2011, the Office of the Legislative Auditor published a report titled Governance of Transit in the Twin Cities Region, which made a recommendation to repeal the Dan Pash gag order, stating, if the Met Council is expected to take a regional view in planning and developing transit, it is important that the Met Council and other transit organizations in the region are able to consider all potential corridors, including the Dan Pash corridor. Lastly, in 2015, when the state passed the state rail plan, one of the segments was from, they identified priority rail corridors, and they divided them into Tier 1, Tier 2, and Tier 3. One of the Tier 1 corridors was from Minneapolis to Northfield that they feel should be evaluated next. This is the Dan Pash Corridor. They're just calling it a different name because it makes the most sense. What I'm stating here is that all these organizations, even though that there's the Dan Pash gag order that says that, you know, the state Met Council shouldn't be spending money on researching this, when they commission and they pay professionals to look at this, they say, hey, there's this corridor here that you need to study. So all we're asking for is for this issue to be put on the same playing field as everybody else. We'd like the moratorium repealed and allow us to evaluate this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So next we have Mayor Williams. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Please state
Good
your
morning.
Name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Hornstein and Representative Hansen and the committee for hearing this bill. As you've heard, the City of Savage and Scott County are fast-growing communities, and they will continue to grow. And crossing the river is pivotal to our economy because every day a significant section of our workforce has been and continues to drive across the river north. And so likewise, our businesses want to have their employees and more employees, customers come to across the river. So, but we have a problem because there's a need for better infrastructure to get people across the river, and it's not there right now. Our current river crossings are already congested during the peak hours of traffic, and this will only get worse as our communities grow. Now I'd like to give you a little background on the Dan Pash Line and the river crossing. The Dan Pash Line was built in 1910 by Marion Savage and other investors on passenger rail. This line took passengers from Northfield and Minneapolis. The right-of-way and other infrastructure is already there and in place. It is currently being used by Cargill in the ports of Savage to go to Minneapolis. We think this might be a long-term solution that would help address congestion and give better accessibility to our communities. But the organization we need to that need to are not allowed to study it. Some of you may say, well, go ahead and study yourself. And we've done a study a few years ago. The reality is a rail is operated by the Metropolitan Council and governed by the state of Minnesota. They need to be part of the study, but the legislature is not allowing it. We were elected as leaders to resolve our problems. We need information to make these hard decisions. And with the Dan Pash gag order in place, we can't make those decisions. As representatives of your community, you would surely take exception if your colleagues passed a law prohibiting the state and or MnDOT from merely researching the issues that are facing your community. We think it is more than appropriate that you as elected representatives can bring solutions to the committee to be considered. Your solutions cost money and sometimes millions of dollars, and the bills you put in front of your colleagues frequently do not have the approval of everyone that is affected by the solution, but you present them anyway. We're asking for the same ability. We're asking to take the opportunity to right the wrong and allow the state, namely MnDOT and the Metropolitan Council, to evaluate the Dan Pash line as a potential option for transit needs in the South Metro area. Now that this plan is of the regional rail, it's been mentioned by Mankato to have passenger rail to St. Paul. Doesn't it make sense to stop in Savage and go to Minneapolis? Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And then next we have Douglas Bruce. And I just ask testifiers to be mindful of time. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Douglas Bruce. I'm a retired consultant working with organizations to make their processes and people as effective as possible. And as a resident of Bloomington, was chosen to represent Bloomington in the interagency Dan Patch study. So I'm here today, and in that role, I represented three things. I live on the line, or I lived on the line, because I don't anymore, number one. Number two, our family used public transportation on a regular basis. And thirdly, I believe in good public policy. Today, I don't live on the line. We've got health care issues in the family. And as a retiree, I'm not using public transportation as much as I used to. But I still believe in good public policy. And as a member of that study commission, I'd like to tell you a little bit about what we learned, somewhat maybe an executive overview. One of the questions that I asked, I said, well, will this address, will this service the five fastest growing centers of employment in the metropolitan area? The answer was no by the professional consultants. I've also learned just recently that the 494, when I was attending a Bloomington City Council meeting, that the 494 corridor going in 694, going around the metro area, has more employment than downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul combined. I also learned in the process of the study that the rail bed itself was extremely poor condition, requiring that a speed limit be placed for the safety of the stuff being carried as well as the neighborhood. And as indicated in the paper, apparently some parts of it are still unusable because of that condition. We learned that there would be proposed five stations. And the question, and they said, well, and the property values around those stations will certainly increase. And that's good. Then we asked the question, well, what will it do to the property values that aren't adjacent to the station? And the professional consultants found resources that indicated that property values would decrease about 12 to 15% along the line. The line's, I don't know how long it is, maybe it's 50 miles. But anyhow, in Bloomington, that has a negative impact. We're talking about millions of dollars of homeowners' property values being decreased. Then the question, of course, becomes, how is that value, you know, replaced? It's no longer a question of, oh, it's just Doug Bruce who's crying about having a train in his backyard. It now becomes a Bloomington-wide issue. How are we going to take care of that shortfall? Does that mean there's an impact on police, parks, road repair? What does it mean? We also talked about traffic, of course, and it was kind of interesting. It was another time, you know, 20-some years ago. They were saying that, well, here's an opportunity now for the wife to take the husband to the train station, drop him off so that he could go to work. She can return home and then do the same thing in the evening. So we're talking about now four trips versus if Dougie Bruce took the drove downtown and drove back. That's two trips. Now it's two trips on roads that are designed to handle volume. Now we're talking about four trips.
Excuse me, Mr. Bruce.
Yes.
If you could wrap up, we've had a lot of opportunity for the supporters to present, and I wanted to get Dakota County's perspective as well.
I appreciate that. I'll just jump to the outcomes. The outcome was that we recommended that we not proceed with the Dan Patch line at that time. We recommended that we get more real-time data. We recommended that we get data on the North Star and the Independent and the anticipated Red Rock line before doing further work on the Dan Patch line. If this was a gag order, I'm surprised that Edina was able to do their report and also came up with the same conclusions that the Dan Patch folks did. I understand that we have a North Star line study that's coming due here in March or April. We do need that report in order to make decisions about transit. And I think that a discussion, this discussion is premature until we have that. I'm not sure what the rush to judgment is all about.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your testimony and the work you did over the years on this issue. Our next testifier is Commissioner Mary Liz Holberg from Dakota County. And before Commissioner Holberg gets settled in, I just wanted to thank her for being here and thank her for her friendship and collegiality over many years. We served together and for at least 10 years, I've lost track, maybe 14. And I always have appreciated her perspective on issues. And, you know, when I was a freshman in the minority, she helped me get my first bill through and always have appreciated that and your friendship. So welcome to the committee that you chaired from 2004, 2005, Biennium, I believe. No? Am I wrong?
I don't recall.
I think it was then. I think it was then. And appreciate your being here. And I wanted to let members know that there is a letter from Dakota County in your packets. So welcome and proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And thank you for your kind words and allowing us time to have a discussion at Dakota County and come back at a later date to testify. I'm also grateful to Representative Hansen. She was generous with her time. With the help of her LA, we were able to quickly schedule a meeting. We recognized that we had a lot of things in common, including the similarity of our glasses. we didn't come to resolution on the Dan Patch issue, no surprise, really. But she was very gracious with her time, and I appreciate that. So I'll start my presentation as a Dakota County Commissioner, and then with your allowance would digress as a speak a little bit as to a 14-year member of the Transportation Finance Committee. I'm looking around the room, and I think Mr. Apetz and Mr. Rudine may be the only people who were around back then that are, and Mr. Bruce. And you were in the legislature in 2000?
I was a city council member.
Okay. the board did have the opportunity at their committee of the whole to have a discussion on this issue on the 7th. And there was unanimous opposition to the Dan Patch portion of this bill and lifting the prohibition on regional rail, Met Council, and MnDOT from studying the line. This is a 44-mile long line. The majority of it in the Lakeville and Burnsville area goes through neighborhoods. It's not what a lot of people typically think of a rail line along a state highway or in an industrial area, but you know, people's backyards, a number of schools. In the Lake Marion area, there's a long portion where the lake's on one side, wetlands on the other. As you move farther north near the Orchard Lake area, it's in a raised area above a wetland. It's really questionable whether, given today's passenger rail safety standards, whether you could even rebuild to that standard in its current alignment. In addition, every time that this has been looked at, Dakota County did a study in 2001. So implementation of this legislation, but they had numerous meetings, the summary that's outlined in the lettering had about 70% opposition. In the past two committee hearings on this bill, I heard a lot about that it's a local control issue with it. Well, in a 44-mile line, if it was a local control issue, which I don't believe it actually is, because locals can study this, and it wasn't the reason for the legislation being put in. But if it was a local control issue, just to address those concerns, the fact that there's one city here that has about a 2-mile section of a 44-mile line asking for this change without, generally you would see a coalition of cities, counties, and in fact in review of Scott County's legislative information online and a discussion with one of their commissioners, they don't have a position on this bill as part of their legislative agenda. So if in fact you were going to look at the local control issue, this is just one very small segment of a line that's had over and over again opposition. As recently as 5 years ago, Edina looked at whether or not the gag rule should be lifted and the line should be studied. And again, about 70% of the input from the public, from the community, was in opposition to even studying the line at that time. And in fact, one of the reports said that in Edina, there were actually at the time two homes whose driveways crossed the railroad track. So that kind of goes to the county and the local control issue. And if I might take off my commissioner hat at this point and talk a little bit of how we got to this legislation. And right around 2000, we had tripartisan government when this bill was passed. Jesse Ventura was the governor. The Senate was controlled by the Democrats, and the House was controlled by the Republicans. And we had a plethora of local organizations coming to the legislature advocating on behalf of transit investments in their particular neighborhoods or lines or areas. And at the time, there was also a MnDOT study that looked at opportunities for commuter rail. And what that study concluded was that of the three lines, North Star, Red Rock, and Dan Patch, the Dan Patch by a country mile was the least viable of the three, North Star being the most viable, and that if in fact the legislature wanted to invest in commuter rail, to start with that one, see how it went, and then make decisions about further investments in the other two corridors. Certainly, I don't have to go into great detail on the challenges with North Star, but it took an act of Congress in order to build, and that it never met the cost-effectiveness index required for federal funding. The last figures that I saw for it for ridership in the first 10 months of 2022 showed a subsidy per rider each way of $144. I also don't really have to spend a lot of time, for those who have been around for a while, to shine a light on the difficulties of negotiations with the railroads. We saw it in the North Star. We saw it with really expensive and drastic ramifications in Southwest. And in fact, in Dakota County, we were trying to just get an easement for a recreational trail over a railroad that's not successful, that will result in a cost of $12 to $13 million for a pedestrian bridge to get across the 10 feet of the railroad right-of-way and a recreational trail corridor. And so back to my belief about this not being a local issue, this is a legislative issue. And the fact that the legislature, in my mind, should keep the guardrails and brakes on this process with MnDOT and Met Council. And I might be a little tongue-in-cheek here, but I understand that now you're in tripartisan government, and I'm sure that every goal and dollar spent, you're in complete alignment with the governor, House and Senate, and there's no controversy or disagreement on how money should be spent or prioritized. But that's not always the case. We've had virtually every combination over the last 20 years, and the Met Council, it's kind of the favorite whipping boy, and I've certainly participated in that sport over the years myself, but unleashing or taking this guardrail off to these lines unleashes the opportunity for various state agencies and Met Council to do things in conflict. In closing, maybe the biggest element to this is protecting the resources that have already been invested in these corridors. Chair Hornstein and I, on a bipartisan basis, worked very hard to implement the first BRT, the Orange Line, on the 35W corridor. We have investments in park and ride lots. We have a situation with COVID and changing work patterns and commute patterns in which our existing transit system is floundering, looking for answers and solutions as to what the next 10, 20 years in transit mean, given the changes in work and commuter patterns. And all of those things would lead me to say, of course you have the Southwest as well that hasn't gone so well, is not even open, and while doesn't run exactly parallel, is in a general commuter shed, if you will. And so by lifting this prohibition, you are losing your opportunity as a legislature to time and space and bless, if you will, how the transit system in the metropolitan area will move forward and expand. And, what happened in those days is that all these organizations would get everybody all excited. They'd show up down here in their matching T-shirts and it became really hard to stop the train, if you will. You know, I'm here today to say that there's great value in the legislature retaining the control of when these particular lines are allowed to be studied by the Met Council and the administration, and that the locals have the ability to do studies on their own dime. And with that, I'll quick look at my notes okay. And see if...
If you could just very quickly wrap up, because we're going to get into right. Some of these issues on the amendments so that you raise.
So I guess in closing, what I would say is that there was wildly successful transit opportunities in this area. Pre-pandemic, the commuter routes out of Lakeville Park and Ride, three floors of cars, had a fare box recovery in excess of 75% of the operating costs, far above the system-wide averages, usually around somewhere 30 to 35% historically. And those investments should be protected, and that the legislature should be the conductor of the train on this
issue.
That's
a good one.
And not turn over to the administration the ability to get out ahead of what the legislature wants to do.
Thank you so much. It was very valuable to have your perspective, Commissioner, and I'm glad we were able to include you here in this hearing. And I know you weren't able to come the first time. So, members, with that, I think we will go into our amendments, and we have a number of them, so hopefully we can keep our conversations focused here. The first amendment is the A2. Representative Murphy, do you want to move the A2 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I would. The A2 amendment requires an agreement between freight railroads and the local interested parties. And so what happened in 2020 is a great example. That was the Bottineau Blue Line Trail. And the taxpayers paid $129 million only to later have the freight railroads say no to occupying the same corridor. And so that was roughly about 10% of the total project. And so the planning wasn't there. So that's why we're interested in moving the A2 amendment.
Okay, discussion and maybe a response from the author or other members? Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few things. I mean, I was involved as a city council member in Bloomington in the 2001 study. And I just like to say at the time in 2001, so over 20 years ago, the only option that was technically legally feasible at the time was to do North Star style commuter rail, because the trains would be sharing the tracks with freight trains. It's still an active freight rail line. There's typically only one round trip a day, so it's very lightly used. But because the only only permissible rolling stock that could be used, which was big, heavy commuter rail cars, you would have had to buy a significant amount of land to straighten out the curves. You would have had to greatly reinforce the rails to be able to carry the weight. And, of course, nobody wants a train that size rolling through their backyard. Today, the model that would be suitable for study on this right is the Capital Rail system in Austin, Texas, where you have light rail-sized vehicles sharing the tracks with freight rail and under a regime of positive train control. There's been a lot of technological advances in the last 23 years. In the way we plan, transit routes in the metro region is that they always are always bottom up. They come up from the counties through their regional rail authorities. The regional rail authority or regional rail authorities will come together, do the initial feasibility planning, develop the alternatives that should be considered. And only once the county regional rail authorities have come up with a plan that would qualify for federal funding, is feasible, that has community support, is it has application made to the Metropolitan Council for inclusion in the regional transportation policy.
Okay, thank you.
The circumstances are completely different now than they were 20 years ago.
Thank you. Here's what we're going to do. I would like to have Representative Petersburg also has raised his hand. Then we're going to have the author respond, and we'll give the last word to the author of the amendment. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will be brief. We're talking about a situation where if you're going to collate or going to use somebody else's asset, before you finish the study, you should at least have an agreement with them, because if the agreement isn't going to occur, you're not going to go anywhere, and it's silly to spend money here. Basically, that's all this amendment says, is that if you're going to go ahead, you need to have an agreement from somebody you're going to use their asset before you move forward.
Thank you. The author of the bill, Representative Hansen, any comments?
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you for the amendment. This sounds like a conversation that's more appropriate for my study bill. I've been very transparent with this committee that this bill is a repealer. My study bill will come next, and I think that that's where this conversation lies. We're simply lifting the gag order with this bill, and just for the intent and purposes of keeping us to the focus of the bill ahead of us, I would ask for a no vote.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say this is insurance for the taxpayer. I mean, these words are pretty simple. They just outline a way for the taxpayer to make sure that we're insuring their best interests. It has nothing to do with the actual number. It only has to do with making sure that they're protected from this bill so that these things are part of the conversation.
Thank you.
I move to approve it.
Thank you very much. To the A2 amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
No, the motion does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Our next amendment is A3, and that is going to be presented by Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move this amendment. So what the A3 amendment basically does is it just requires the consent of all the cities involved in this line. Anyone who spent any amount of time on a city council would know that cities have a great amount of power in their own autonomy as a city. If, in fact, the city of Savage desperately wants this commuter rail to be studied, have a gag order lifted, that's great for the city. But there are other cities, a vast number of cities, I would imagine, on this line that do not, especially to include the city of Edina. And I think that on the very base level of this, it's a local control issue. We need to empower our cities to say, hey, if you want this, great. Have that discussion on your own and then sign on to the plan. That's your prerogative. It is not the state's job to come in and try and convince cities that they should, in fact, have this railroad. This is 100% a local control issue. One powerful representative here in the capital of St. Paul should not have the ability to completely derail or re-rail an entire operation. This needs to include all the cities involved. I would ask for a roll call on this one, please, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. As the roll call has been requested and granted. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the amendment. In my last visit to your committee, I said that I'd be open to talking about amendments should there be a conversation. Those conversations have not occurred, and I'm open to that. It's also your prerogative to drop a bill if you'd like to put this into state statute, and for that reason, I'd ask for a no vote.
Representative Wilson, any final thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is 100% a local control issue, so as you vote for this amendment, please keep the small cities, the large cities, and any other city, including the counties, in your heart of hearts.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. We have a roll call, and Mr. Petrie will take the roll.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Fogelman is excused. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Censor Mira.
No.
Censor Mira, no. And Mr. Chair, we have 4 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 4 ayes, 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. We are now on to the A4 amendment, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like a roll call on this one, too, please.
Okay, roll call requested and granted. Proceed.
So, thank you. Basically, what this bill, what this amendment does is that it only lifts the moratorium on regional rail authority. As we heard from Commissioner Holberg, this is an issue where the state needs to control its own funding sources and so forth. But if Regional Rail Authority wants to research this, I think that could make some sense. And so basically what this amendment does is it says we'll keep the moratorium on what state funds control, but the regional rail authorities that have some more direct input can certainly explore this if they choose.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the amendment. I'll just say I recommend a no vote.
Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor signify by saying...
Roll call.
Oh, roll call. Sorry. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Censor Mira.
No.
Censor Mira, no. And Mr. Chair, we have 4 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 4 ayes, 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Thank you for offering the amendment, Representative Petersburg. Okay. A5, I believe, Representative Hudella. That is your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A5. Members, I like to think of this as the rambunctious spouse or partner amendment. We've all been there. You get your first home, you get your first apartment. One of you decides you want to remodel. So you start tearing apart the kitchen. You get halfway through the project. You run out of money. And that weekend, that spouse or partner says, hey, next weekend I'm going to start remodeling the sunroom or some other part of where you're at. So my amendment looks at and says, hey, I'm okay with this bill and lifting the gag order and the moratorium, but we got to finish the kitchen first. And the kitchen's the Southwest rail line, which is currently $1.5 billion, with a B, over budget, 10 years behind. There's hundreds of millions that we need to find yet to finish that project. It's the responsible thing to do. You wouldn't let your spouse or partner start this other major remodel before you finish the job that you already started. So excited for this amendment. Would love to vote on the bill as long as we finish the Southwest line first.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad we didn't do this amendment on Valentine's Day. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not in a relationship with the government, so I don't know if I follow this analogy here, but I would ask for a no vote. My community is not dependent on what's happening in other communities, and I think plenty of other representatives would feel the same way, so I ask for a no vote.
I think maybe Representative Cagle does, but she won't. We're in now discussion, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This just I had a deja vu flashback to our Ravage and Savage field hearing. I think we heard this bill that day, too, and I remember Representative Kosnick making that same exact argument, so I just had a little bit of a flashback.
Yeah. I didn't know we had hearings that were named, but that was a very passionate hearing, as I remember. Okay, any further discussion? And we're just doing a voice vote here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll just encourage members to finish that kitchen first.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed?
No.
The motion does not prevail. But thank you, Representative Goodell. Next, we have an A6 from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would move the A6 and request a roll call for this one.
I won't forget your roll call this time.
That's right.
Okay, proceed.
Basically, it retains the ban, but gives actually authority to Hennepin County and Scott County, who seem to be the ones interested in it, give them authority to go ahead and expend their funds in order to do that. Again, we're in a situation where we have a lot of moving forces and a lot of moving government entities and so forth along this patch, and we're getting some pushback based upon small numbers of that, and I think it's important for us to keep the priority for those that are interested in, for them to go ahead and do that. And so that's my amendment.
Okay. We'll hear any discussion, and we also want to hear the perspective of the author.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for this. I think, you know, for me, when I'm reading through this one, I think I would reference you to State Statute 174.88 Subdivision 2, which already prohibits the commissioner from doing some of this, and so I think this is duplicative, and for that reason I would ask for a no vote.
Discussion? Representative Petersburg?
I'm not sure we're not talking about commissioner doing anything. This is really talking about Hennepin County and Scott County being able to go move forward with it, which I think is a little bit different. But in either case, I know the outcome of the vote, but I would just certainly recommend
and
yes,
this
vote.
Is a chance to have a discussion. So,
and Chair, I'm happy to read that statute if members would be pleased. The commissioner shall not spend any state funds for construction or equipment of commuter rail facilities unless the funds have been appropriated by law specifically for those purposes. The commissioner shall not spend state funds to study commuter rail unless the funds are appropriated in legislation that identifies the route, including origin and destination. So again, I think this is a conversation that would be best had on my study bill. And honestly, lifting this moratorium would give my counties the ability to do exactly what this amendment seeks to do. So again, I think it's duplicative, and I would ask for a no vote.
Okay, Representative Petersburg, and
we'll
give you the last word here.
Thank you. I'm not going to argue, but I think your definition of commissioner and rail authority are different. And the commissioner, you're talking about commissioner of transportation, and rail authority is different than that. But neither way, I ask for a yes vote.
Okay. We will now proceed to a vote on the A6 amendment. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Hudela.
Yes.
Hudela, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensor Miro.
No.
Sensor Miro, no. And Mr. Chair, it's 4 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 4 ayes, 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Our next amendment, our next amendment is the A7, and that it belongs to the Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe that there is a amendment to the amendment as well that just cleans up some information. So should we?
So why don't you move the A10 first?
I'll move the A10, Mr. Chair.
Okay, and then maybe explain to us this.
It's 3 lines. It just cleans up a little bit of this amendment to actually make it a true, what we hope to accomplish through this amendment.
Okay. This is just simply an amendment to get the amendment in the shape that the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Representative Olson, to Thank the you. Amended A7 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to move the amended A7 amendment, and I'd like a roll call right off the bat here. But here's the big problem that I have. We keep hearing this story about how, well, this doesn't really apply to this bill. This applies to the next bill that we're going to hear, and that is this study. We're going to be talking about removing this gag order. We remove it, and then we waste taxpayer dollars on it. This is what is going to happen. We will open a floodgate. And then taxpayer dollars will all of a sudden rush out of this, and it'll be gone. Now, I've always been this proponent of ensuring that the taxpayer dollars from this state are responsibly expended in all avenues of transportation. I am not the person who attacks buses, and I'm not the person who attacks trains, not the person who attacks roads and bridges and airplanes, the whole gamut of this game. I don't do that. But what I do have a problem with is wasting money. And what we're going to see by removing this gag order, we are going to see people asking to waste taxpayer dollars, state taxpayer dollars. And how it's going to turn out to be, and just look down the road just a little bit, you're going to see the state is going to be fighting against these cities. They're going to be fighting against these counties. One person is going to be trying to convince the other one that their plan is the right plan. You're going to see city levy money being spent to combat state taxpayer dollars. And this is going to turn into a wildly out of rate decision here. And I really love the Star Tribune's quote for me. I'd like to amend it a little bit to add that if we do, in fact, remove this gag order, what we are going to see is not only will we be throwing money into a pit, but we will be taking taxpayer dollars. We will be digging the pit with taxpayer dollars, and then we'll be throwing taxpayer dollars into it and then lighting it on fire. This is what will happen. We can spend this money in so many better ways. We're already talking about the governor's plan includes $700 million worth of tab fee increases. We're going to throw money away here. Why don't we save some money, not raise taxes, and not plan the study? So what my amendment does here is it will prevent local units of government from utilizing state and federal funds to plan, to study, and to, in essence, dig a hole to throw the money in and light on fire, because this is what will happen. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Olson. We'll have some committee discussion now, and Representative Hansen, you can kick us off with that.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the concern. I don't know where you got a crystal ball, but I'd like one. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know. And this is what we need to do to get the cards on the table. I will have this committee reminded that that study that you're mentioning was done in 2001. I was in middle school. My predecessor was in second grade. Our generation deserves an opportunity to be at the table, to have a conversation with all of the options laid out, with the latest technology and the latest research options. So for that reason, I would ask for a no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would just say I am impressed with the class of 2020 in this debate. Is there a discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. And I think one of the challenges we have is that some of us with more experience in understanding how studies actually work around here understand the complexities and what happens with studies and where they go. And having been involved and actually being authors of some in which there has been nothing that have been attained, it does seem like a waste of money. And whereas we all want to have input into our own controls and control our own actions, and things around us, sometimes we need to also rely on the wisdom of the past as well. So for that very reason, I ask for a yes vote.
Any quick final comments?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the author of the bill, I was actually only 10 years old when Dakota County had their study, but Edina doing theirs in 2017 was a lot more closely relative to today. I would just say that whereas when we're talking about government, yeah, I did come in 2020, but I wasn't born yesterday, and I know what's going to happen if we remove this gag order. Taxpayer dollars will be wasted.
There's the soundbite of the day. Any last comments, and then we're going to...
Thank you, Chair. And I would just remind the committee, my bill has a $0 fiscal note. There is no money in this bill at all, but I'm happy to have this conversation about this money again, like I said last time, on my much more controversial bill for the study.
Okay. We have a roll call requested on the Olson A7 amendment as amended. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormira.
No.
Sensormira, no. And Mr. Chair, we have 4 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 4 ayes and 8 nays, the amendment does not prevail. Thank you, Representative Olson. We have a couple more amendments now. The A8 amendment from Representative Petersburg is next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would move the A8 and ask for a roll call on this one as well, please.
Okay, thank you. Roll call is requested and
basically granted. Because we've had so much issue with the Kenilworth corridor and others and kind of co-location and the negotiations with it, basically this amendment, it looks kind of backwards, but basically what it says is that we've authorized the co-location for that particular project, but no others. Because I think it's important for as a legislature to understand the far-reaching ramifications of that. And so that's what this bill does. It just says that in the future, we aren't going to do any more co-location of light rail and other rail corridors.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. I will have a comment on this, but I wanted to have Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair. I defer to you on all things transportation and would simply recommend it.
Well, I would just thank you. I agree with your recommendation. And I'll just say very quickly, I have some empathy for this just because of our experience with Southwest. And you may recall a number of years ago, then Representative Runbeck and I did, we introduced a bill on co-location specifically on Southwest. And what I'll say is I think then, and I still believe that co-location was a bad idea there, but we have so many other lines where it's fine. There's specific circumstances in Southwest where it's a bad idea. But, you know, Amtrak is co-located, or many commuter rails are co-located. There are instances where light rail makes sense to be co-located when it's not in a very, very narrow corridor that involves a tunnel, right? So I just think, while I have some sympathy, Representative Petersburg, I think that to just make a blanket a ban on co-location would not be prudent. So that's why I recommend a no vote. Any other further discussion? And is there a roll call on this one?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
No.
Hornstein, no. Tabke.
No.
Tabke, no. Petersburg.
Yes.
Petersburg, yes. Brand.
No.
Brand, no. Elkins.
No.
Elkins, no. Hudella.
Yes.
Hudella, yes. Cagle.
No.
Cagle, no. Kraft.
No.
Kraft, no. Murphy.
Yes.
Murphy, yes. Norris.
No.
Norris, no. Olson.
Yes.
Olson, yes. Sensormira.
No.
Sensormira, no. Mr. Chair, we have 4 ayes and 8 nays.
There being 4 ayes and 8 nays, the A8 amendment does not prevail. Okay. Is this the next one? One last one. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A9, and I will move that one for now. It actually goes a little bit one step farther, and that is a concern that I had that there may be potential for somebody wanting to do a commuter rail or something that would actually intersect and actually go on top of the right-of-way of light rail, which are completely designed differently. And so I had concerns about that. I put in this amendment, and I wanted to talk about it, and I will withdraw the amendment, so we don't have to vote on it. But I think it's a concern that we have when we do a lot of these co-locations in which we say, yes, we could do it, but then afterwards we find out there's all sorts of complications with it, and I just think it's a poor idea to do some of that with it. So I will withdraw this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. The A9 amendment is withdrawn. And that brings us, I believe, to the end of the amendments section of this hearing. And any further discussion on the bill? Representative Kraft?
Yeah, just I want to commend Representative Hansen on bringing this bill and on her patience through these amendment processes. I read the bill very carefully. It took about 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's very narrowly defined, and I think we should be able to talk about something and study something in the current time period. So I appreciate that this has been a dry run for the more controversial bill that's coming, I'm glad we've gone through this, and we'll support this.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, Representative Nelson. Why didn't you combine the two bills? I mean, because it could have been done all with one bill, with the moratorium being released and then the study bill put together. Was there any reason?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you. And just to correct the record, I'm Representative Hansen. Thank you. Just want to be sure. Sorry
about that.
Thank you.
I apologize.
And thank you, Chair. We didn't combine them because of the conversation you're seeing here today. I think it's important to address these issues separately. I think that both sides of the aisle deserve the opportunity to have a conversation about the two separate issues because they are just that, two separate issues.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And we'll quickly move to Representative Elkins.
For that very reason is the reason why they should have been together, because without seeing the study, we don't know what this lifting of the moratorium actually is. And so by lifting the moratorium and then having the study later, in which we know that where the control is, it really is a concern because we're trying to put the horse behind the cart, you know, shall we say, because we don't know what the cost is. We don't know what's going on. That may have impacted whether or not we agree with the particular moratorium, lifting the moratorium. And it's that very reason why the moratorium was put in place, in my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would
highly recommend it. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. A very quick comment, Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, this was put into law, in session law, but both of these provisions, and kind of in haste in the wake of the 2021 study, things have changed dramatically, and it's just bad policy to tie the hands of local and regional governments on something like this, where in this, you know, succeeding 20-plus years, the technology that can be brought to bear is changed dramatically. It's just, it's bad policy, and it ought not to be in state law.
Okay, we will have a final comment from the author, and I believe Representative Petersburg, you had a request?
Request a recall, please.
A roll call has been requested and granted. Final words for us before a vote, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you again, members of the committee. I know this is a hot topic. I don't want to gloss over that. This, the elephant in the room, I'm acknowledging it. And I thank you for having the conversation about it. And while I respect deeply, if you have had a conversation with me, you know I deeply respect institutional knowledge and generational knowledge. I do nothing without my elders by my side. And I learn from the people who came before me. So I do understand how studies work, because even though the study was written when I was a child, I can still read the study and see the gaps in what's missing from the research and the technology that was available then and to now. And I just have to say and speak up for our generation. Millennials and Gen Z, we're not really we're not okay with accepting studies as empirical when they were done before the technology revolution was upon us. It is our right in this generation as taxpayers, as voters, as a representative of a community that's grown from 4,000 people over the last 20 years to 29,000 people. My community has grown 625%, and I and my generation deserves the opportunity to be at the table with all of the information ahead of us that is considered empirical, relevant, and modern. So with that, I would ask for your yes vote. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Members, I am going to renew my motion that House File 246 be recommended and re-referred to the General Register. We have a roll call on this bill. Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Hornstein, yes. Tabke.
Yes.
Tabke, yes. Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Brand.
Yes.
Brand, yes. Elkins.
Yes.
Elkins, yes. Hudela.
No.
Hudela, no. Cagle.
Yes.
Cagle, yes. Kraft.
Yes.
Kraft, yes. Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Norris.
Yes.
Norris, yes. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Censor Mira.
Yes.
Censor Mira, yes. And Mr. Chair, we have 8 ayes and 4 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 4 nays, House File 246 is re-referred to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Hansen. And again, thank you, committee members. This is we've had a number of bills that have been involved, and I've always appreciated this committee's thoughtful discussion, civil discussion, and thanks to Representative Hansen and to the committee. Okay, our next bill is House File 1272. And Representative Brand, do you have a motion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move that House File 1272 be re-referred to the Judiciary Committee.
Okay, we have House File 1272 before us, and I believe you have an amendment, which I believe is...
I don't have an amendment.
That's not my amendment.
I'm sorry. Representative Petersburg has an amendment. We'll address that shortly. Sorry about that.
You're right.
It's a good one. I think you may accept
it. I think there's a decent chance of that, but we'll have to talk about it. Representative Brand, welcome. Thank you for bringing to us House File 1272.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today we are going to be talking about House File 1272, and what this does is codifies in statute a minimum of 2 passengers in a crew operating a locomotive in the state of Minnesota. I believe that every train should have more than one operator present in the cab. That's a personal opinion. It also has widespread statewide support. I set up this legislation because I supported it back in 2019 when this legislation was in the legislature and being discussed when I first heard about this issue. From my perspective, I believe that operators of these magnificently large pieces of equipment, several miles long in fact, cannot simply do it by themselves. Would you feel comfortable getting into a 737 with only one pilot? In 2016, the Federal Railway Authority proposed a federal 2-person crew rule. The Trump administration at the time shelved the rule, arguing that there was no safety data to support this decision. A federal court struck down their decision to shelve this. Until we have such a rule in place nationwide, I believe that we do an honor to the folks in this profession by setting a floor on the crew members to 2 and no less than that going forward. Today I have actual rail workers with me to talk about their experiences and why they think this is essential as well. As you will hear today from my testifiers, there are issues that happen on trains, real emergency situations, and having more than one person aboard is also a benefit to the communities that they travel through. And with that, I will transfer over my time to the testifiers.
Thank you, and I want to just ask testifiers to keep their comments about 2 minutes each because we want to have a committee discussion and vote on the bill today. So our first testifier is Mr. Joel Mueller. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. If you want someone else to start, then we can mix it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is Nick Kadich, and I am the Minnesota Legislative Director for Smart Transportation Division, representing conductors, engineers, and yardmasters. I've been a railroad conductor for 22 years working in northern Minnesota. We're sounding the alarm. The minimum threshold has been found, and we can't go below 2 people on a freight train. And we respectfully ask you today to support House Resolution 1272 requiring two people on freight trains in Minnesota. Currently, the normal operation of freight trains in Minnesota includes two crew members who work in concert. One crew person operates the controls of the locomotive, essentially driving the train, which is a lot on its own. The other crew person is responsible for ensuring compliance with all train orders, rules, and signals, maintaining all necessary paperwork and waybills for hazardous materials in the train, is the first person on the scene of an accident or incident, does all the work outside the locomotive cab, like opening road crossings for the public and first responders, provides Samaritan response in the event of a collision with the public, and provides a check and balance dynamic in the locomotive cab, ensuring compliance and attentiveness. The second crew member also works with first responders, making sure railroad equipment is either secured or moved as necessary to keep them safe. The necessity of two-person crews has reached a critical point. This conversation has evolved over the past 10 years as different business models driving railroads have been implemented and technologies have been added to locomotives and operations. Class I railroads adopted a business model known as Precision Scheduled Railroading, or PSR. This slogan defines a strategy focused on doing more with less. Its only function is to drive short-term gains in stock prices while gutting the railroad industry as we knew it. Crew size is just one more place to expand profits at any cost. As the workforce has already been cut by almost a third to satisfy the demands of PSR, the workers remaining are forced to endure longer hours with very little time off. Railroads have implemented harsh attendance policies that force workers to report for duty sick and fatigued or risk losing their employment. Two people in the cab of the locomotive, in addition to all the defined duties for each crew member, provide a check and balance against the grind of long hours worked around the clock. It takes two people acting as sounding boards for each other to navigate the complex operating rules and regulations governing train movements. Decisions are constantly being made about the safe operation of their train as it rolls through communities and towns. Technology is added to the duties and responsibilities of train crews. Positive Train Control, or PTC, is meant to enhance the safety of a two-person crew. It was not conceived or designed to function as a crew member. PTC has been fully implemented, yet only 39.5% of Class I railroad tracks are equipped with it. The system is designed to stop trains, and it takes two crew members, in addition to all their other duties, to keep the system in check and the train moving. Conversations have been held at the federal level regarding minimum crew size, but there is no existing regulation or law. States have authority to regulate railroad safety under the Federal Railroad Safety Act. The goal of this bill is to not go backwards on safety. We are the workers from the front line of the railroad industry telling you that two people are absolutely necessary to safely operate a freight train in our state. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kadich. Now we'll hear from Mr. Mueller.
Good morning, Chair Hornstein, members of the committee. I'm Joel Mueller with the Brotherhood of Locomotive Engineers and Trainmen. I have over 28 years of experience in the rail industry working as a brakeman, a conductor, and currently as a locomotive engineer. I want to begin by saying that this bill will only maintain the current crew staffing standard, which is a crew of two. In most cases, the crew consists of a conductor and a locomotive engineer. Included in your handout is a picture of a modern-day locomotive cab. You'll notice the controls are extensive and include several display screens, levers, buttons, and gauges. As you can imagine, it takes a tremendous amount of concentration to operate this equipment. Over the course of my career, there have been many advancements in technology in the rail industry, including the implementation of distributed power, energy management systems, positive train control, or PTC, and installation of alerter devices in the cabs of the locomotives. Alerter devices and PTC were designed to be nothing more than a safety overlay stopping the train should the worst happen. Keep in mind, stopping a train is not a simple task. An engineer relies on extensive training and experience to factor in all the variables necessary to safely bring a train to a controlled stop. Last resort safety devices like PTC and locomotive alerters stop a train with haste and prejudice that may get the job done, but poses a risk of uncontrolled in-train forces that could cause a catastrophic derailment. Distributed power and energy management systems have allowed the railroads to increase train lengths from an average of a mile long when I began my career to up to 3 miles long today. This technology has increased the workload of an engineer to the point of creating task overload. Having a second person in the cab of the locomotive is essential to safe operations It allows the engineer to focus solely on the operation of the train while the second person takes care of the numerous other tasks that are required. While the cuts to the workforce throughout the industry have been mentioned, I feel the toll those cuts have taken on the remaining employees bears repeating. The remaining employees are required to work longer hours with less time off between shifts. This has made an already demanding schedule much worse. Crews are expected to be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Shifts exceed 12 hours with only 90 minutes notice to report for work. Many railroad workers are required to work up to 276 hours a month. That's 70 hours a week. With such a demanding schedule, fatigue is a challenge railroad crews are faced with daily. Railroad workers are not allowed to take time off when they are sick. If a railroad worker calls in sick, they could face discipline up to and including termination. Maintaining the current staffing of two individuals on a train ensures crews stay safe, stay focused when facing these challenges. Amtrak and commuter agencies have determined that a crew of two or more is essential to this safely operate their passenger trains. Amtrak and North Star trains that operate within the state do so with a crew of up to 3 to 4 crew members. They are in constant communication within the train and operate equipment that is not comparable to freight equipment. I want to thank the committee for taking the time to consider this bill, and I will be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mueller. Our next testifier is going to be joining us virtually, and we have Amy, I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, Hummel from Correct. Citizens Acting for Rail Safety Twin Cities.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein and committee members. My name is Amy Hummel. I live in Robbinsdale, and I'm a volunteer with Citizens Acting for Rail Safety Twin Cities. We work to bring the citizen voice to freight rail safety matters. I'm not related to anyone who ever worked for a railroad. Please bear with me, though, as I read this testimony. I am print impaired. I've only got about 450 more words. Like laws in 8 other states, HF 1272 would require freight trains to continue employing 2-person crews. The railroads oppose this requirement as an infringement on their bargaining rights and a threat to efficiency and innovation. Today, however, with stepped-up production and shipment of crude oil due to the war in Ukraine, Americans must be able to depend on safe and reliable freight rail, delivering goods and going through their communities. The recent East Palestine derailment, however, is raising legitimate concerns. Clearly, we are not starting from a place of reliably safe hazmat rail operations. Now is not the time for experiments with marginal-sized train crews, and this is not the place either. Minnesota's large hub of rail routes going, carrying ever longer trains of oil, ethanol, and other hazmats. There are over 120 Minnesota cities and towns along crude oil routes alone, including the Twin Cities. Probably some of these cities in the list on the last page of our handout are in your district. In addition to preventing the accidents that we will never hear about because they didn't happen, on-train conductors provide critical, instant, on-site assistance to contain and mitigate accidents. Despite critical public safety concerns and a clear public interest, the public has no voice in private management labor negotiations. Remember that Bakken crude oil train with known engine trouble that derailed and exploded in 2013? Incinerating 47 people from age 4 to 93 and destroying the center of beautiful Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, after the solo trainman on the previous ship was ordered to leave the train unattended overnight on the main track in the next town. That engineer of his own free will made his own way back to the derailment site, ran into the fire zone without PPE, and decoupled some unexploded cars so they could be towed away. Canada has now reinstated its 2-person crew rule. My point here, though, is not crew size. It's the fact that that same loaded oil train went right through Minneapolis the day before. Yes, it could happen here. And I'm hoping that TC&W Railroad will have a 2-person crew when one of their ethanol trains goes through the Kenilworth Tunnel with the SWLRT. Things go wrong, and the unexpected does happen, often at great human cost. Freight transportation safety requires a priority end-to-end system dynamic with built-in redundancies and backups and valid enforceable standards. Since the Triangle Shirtwaist factory fire, American employers rightfully have not had free rein on worker safety, and most workers would not voluntarily bargain away their right to safety. So we have worker safety laws and environmental and public safety laws. This gives citizens a voice at the table, even when it comes to railroad staffing. In closing, I urge you to remember that public safety is government's job one, and to vote to pass HF 1272. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hummel. Ms. Hummel referenced some correspondence with the committee. You don't have it in your packets, but it will be posted online as part of the record. And there are letters in your packet, too, that I just wanted to reference. These folks are not testifying today, but we have a letter from Teamsters 120, the League of Cities, the Transportation Alliance, Blue Earth County Sheriff's Office, and Mr. Phil Qualley from James Consulting. Those are all in your packet. And so our last testifier is Sarah Erickson from the Minnesota Regional Rail Authority. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Erickson. State your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, committee members. My name is Sarah Erickson. I'm the new executive director of the Minnesota Regional Rail Authority. Over to my left is John Appitz. He's still watching over to me to make sure I'm not screwing up. There are four overarching themes today about why this bill should not pass. First, this is not about safety. There is no data or evidence to suggest that a one-person crew is safer. Second, this puts railroads at a competitive disadvantage, which is bad for the movement of goods across the country, bad for the environment, and bad for the state's infrastructure. The issue of two-man crew belongs in the railroad union bargaining process, collective bargaining, where it has always been. And finally, states have no authority to mandate crew sizes. It's federally preempted. Where this bill has become law and has been litigated, in Illinois, for example, the court found with federal preemption. The assertion that one-person crews are safer than two-person crews is false. The real-world performance of one-person crew, as reflected in data from the United States and around the world, establishes they pose no safety risk. One-person crews have been used safely throughout the United States and the world. Passenger trains, non-union short lines, many foreign railroads have used one-person crews for decades. U.S. passenger trains have operated for many years with only one crew member in the cab. Operating with a single crew member in the cab is now standard for commuter trains and Amtrak trips. Minnesota's own light rail operates with one person in the crew cab. Many short lines have been operating safely and effectively with one-person crews for decades. With the implementation of positive train control traction, it makes redundant many of the functions traditionally performed by the conductor. Things like observing wayside signals, recording dispatch orders. PTC is a computerized system that, if necessary, stops a train automatically if the engineer fails to take the necessary steps or actions. Locomotive technology has evolved so only one engineer has the operational controls that impact the train. The engineer's workload has been further reduced by the implementation of locomotive energy management systems, which improve the train's handling. To the issues raised of community safety, train crews are not expected to perform as first responders and are not trained to be first responders. To the contrary, they are trained to move away from danger, including dangers arising from the potential release of hazardous material. Additionally, something called an alerter is in each locomotive. If a train operator has made no action nor pushed the alerter button within 30 seconds to 2 minutes, depending on what they are carrying and the speed they are going, the train will stop. To the extent that there are responsibilities positive train control traction does not eliminate, railroads and unions will identify those safety issues and work through them during the bargaining process. Finally, this bill comes at a time when the state of Minnesota and other federal and state regulators are considering connected and automated vehicles, embracing regulatory flexibility, performance-based standards, and the idea that safety is advanced by harnessing technological innovations to reduce and mitigate safety incidents. This bill goes in precisely the opposite direction. It will harm the environment. Rail is the most fuel-efficient and environmentally friendly way to move freight over our land. On average, trains are 3 to 4 times more efficient than trucks. It will place greater stress on the state's infrastructure. Finally, a crew size mandate drives up shipping costs at a time when consumers are already grappling with record inflation and supply chains. Historically, crew sizes have been an issue for collective bargaining. There's a long history of technological improvements in the railroad industry leading to productivity gains. Diesel locomotives eliminated the need for a fireman. That was bargained for. End of train devices eliminated the need for a caboose and a caboose personnel. That was bargained for. So in conclusion, due to the lack of data to support this as a safety issue, the economic impact to the state, and the fact that the state doesn't actually have the authority to regulate in this space, we respectfully ask you to consider voting no.
Thank you. Ms. Erickson, we have a question or comment from Representative Olson, and then we're going to get to the A5 amendment from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This might be to Ms. Erickson, but it also might be to the Brotherhood representatives here today. Two set of questions. First, are there any really large railroads operating in Minnesota today that do not already have two-member crews? And then the second question would be, if a company were to reduce it down to a single crew member operating the train, and that individual would have performed something that was in it, you know, they were the reason why the accident occurred, who's liable for the damages caused through that decision of the company? Is it the company that's liable? Is it the individual liable? Who, if there's an accident on a train, who's liable due to negligence?
Ms. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are 4 Class 1s currently operating in Minnesota, BNSF, Union Pacific, Canadian National, Canadian Pacific. Those all have 2-person crews currently, and those are bargained for. To the question of liability, I would have to get back to you. I think that's probably a unique legal question that I am not in a great position to answer, and I would be happy to follow up with you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Norris.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein, and thank you, Ms. Erickson. I've got a couple of questions. I guess I'm not sure I completely agree with the premise that these things should be solely collectively bargained when there's a compelling public safety interest at stake. But for the sake of argument, let's go there. Just this past year, we saw at the federal level where our federal partners had to get involved in collective bargaining. So can you talk about why that had to happen and why it seemed like the collective bargaining process between the union and the railroads wasn't sufficient there?
Ms. Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, to be quite candid, as the Minnesota Regional Rail Authority, we did not get involved in any federal collective bargaining discussions or agreements. I think I know probably as much as you do and what I read in the paper, which was it fell apart and Congress had to act, and a Democratic Congress ended up passing the collective bargaining agreement between both sides.
Very quick follow-up.
Yeah. So it appears there is, some precedent for legislative bodies having to get involved with this. Yes, has crew size ever changed due to legislative action in the past?
Ms. Erickson or anyone else?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To my knowledge, I've only been doing this 10 years, so I'm not Mary Liz Holberg, to be candid. I guess Mr. Mueller has a different perspective. I believe, generally speaking, that is handled within the collective bargaining process. I don't believe there's been a state law that has mandated a crew size.
And a very quick explanation, Mr. Mueller.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question one more time?
Yeah, Mr.
Representative Norris.
Chair Hornstein, I was asking you if there's ever been an instance where legislative action has, changed crew size requirements.
Oh, yeah. Most recently was in, I believe, the early 90s on PEB 219, Presidential Emergency Board, that reduced the crew size from 3 down to the current size of 2. And that was imposed by, I believe it was President Bush at the time, and passed by Congress.
Thank you.
Just one more
very quickly.
This is just should hopefully be a short question again for Ms. Erickson. You mentioned the issue of preemption, and I'm wondering if you could point to a specific federal law or regulation that you think would stop Minnesota from enacting this law.
Ms. Erickson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Norris, that is something that I'm going to follow up with you. I can probably phone a friend, but in the interest of time, I can just speak to you after this. I will say that any time that a bill like this has been passed into law in any state and been challenged in court, federal preemption has applied.
Thank you. We have an A5 amendment from Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A5 amendment. This one is kind of, I wouldn't say there's peace in the valley, but all sides have agreed that this would be okay. Basically, it changes railroad to just Class 1 and Class 2 railroads. The short line railroads, which have different policies and procedures, are currently working under many different other personnel issues, and I think the feeling was that we don't want to necessarily change them. We want to protect the Class 1 and Class 2. So that is the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Discussion to the A5. I'll start with the author if he has a recommendation or a comment on the A5 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a point of personal preference, I don't appreciate having bills change that I've authored without at least having somebody reach out to me ahead of time to talk about it and at least discuss it. Being that it is, today I will accept this amendment with a caution going forward that if somebody wants to amend my bill, they should please at least either email, text, or call me ahead of time.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? So the author is recommending a yes vote. Is there any discussion, Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, and I do apologize, Representative Bradford, for not doing that. It's been hectic the last few days, and this came up very quickly, but that doesn't excuse that, and so I apologize for not talking with you before. I do request a yes.
Thank you, and I appreciate both of your your concern and your comment, Representative Petersburg. Further discussion to the A5. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All of those opposed, the motion prevails. Any further discussion to House File 1272 as amended? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's just a little bit interesting. You know, today is kind of rail day. But on one hand, we are talking about eliminating a mandate that was created regarding rail, and we had extensive citations of utilizing technology, and all that was really old, and it only applied then, and it doesn't apply now. And now we're talking about another state mandate, but we're talking about adding a state mandate that potentially 20 years down the road, well, it's completely enacted right now. Every single major Class 1 and Class 2 railroad is currently utilizing a two-crew train. We're talking about eliminating a state's ability to do something regarding technology 20 years down the road. So on one hand, we say, oh, no, technology is the way of the future. We shouldn't shackle the state to old laws that take 20 years to change. And now we're talking about a state mandate that will take 20 years to unshackle ourselves from, although there's currently no reason why we have it. This doesn't make us safer. In fact, in my opinion, I would say it maybe makes us less safe due to the fact that we've heard countless testimony of how the railmen are at their wits' end. They're at the breaking point. They can't possibly work any longer. Well, if we utilize technology and we can safely run a one-man crew, well, that alleviates one person who can get some rest. We have labor shortages. Maybe technology's not there right now, but shackling ourselves today removes that ability 20 years from now. And it's the exact opposite of what the argument was in the last rail bill here. I find it very ironic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're going to have a comment from Representative Petersburg, and then the author can make any closing statement. So, Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would like a roll call on the bill, please.
Okay. We have the roll call requested and granted. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you. You know, over the years, we've been hearing about how Class 1 and Class 2 railroads are basically regulated through the federal government. and direct it through that way. And that's a reason for the preemption, shall we say, in which the federal government always has the final say, and that we have to abide by what they do as well. I have great sympathy for the safety and concerns, and I'm kind of tying one way or the other, but I think Representative Olson really said it best. It's important for us not to remove some options into the future. And we heard about how we want to use technology today and today's technology, and we don't know what technology is going to occur into the future. We're talking about autonomous vehicles going on our roads, including semis and trucks. We already know, and we're expecting that here in this committee as well. How that's going to impact railroad and rail safety, I don't know at this time. And I also agree that state legislature, at all costs, at least to the best of their ability, stay away from employer-employee relationships. And for that very reason that I'm asking for a no at this particular time, it is a situation where I think we need to allow the processes that are in place that have already protected us up to this point continue to work and work their magic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your comments, Representative Petersburg. Representative Brand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here's the situation. So in the Senate, they actually passed this legislation out of the Senate yesterday on the judiciary, and actually two of the four authors happen to be Republican. So there is bipartisanship on this bill going forward. I will just say, Mr. Mueller told me that when he first started working in the railroad, his train was less than a mile long. Now they're getting 3 mile long trains. Life has changed in the railroad industry. I will point to a January 19th, 2013 article by AP News stating, the title is Railroads Plan to Test Idea of Cutting Train Crews Put on Hold. It says here, Union Pacific in particular has been undaunting in pursuing one-person crews after the Federal Rail Authority proposed a rule last summer that would require two people in the cab of a locomotive in most circumstances. And so we are at the point where we're looking at the possibility of a one-person crew. And I can tell you right now, I don't feel like that's where we need to go. I think we need to codify in our statutes, not just have a company policy in place that prevents undue harm to our communities and undue harm to the folks that work in this industry. As I mentioned with Union Pacific, it's also worth pointing out that they topped the net profits for any particular railroad in the country, with profits topping over $7 billion, with a B, in 2022. Safety first, until it costs money, isn't a great policy. We're not putting any carrier out of business by encoding this into our laws. So I would ask for a yes vote.
Thank you so much, members. Representative Brand renews his motion that House File 1272, as amended, be recommended and re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. We have a roll call, Mr. Petrie.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Hornstein, yes. Tabke.
Yes.
Tabke, yes. Petersburg.
No.
Petersburg, no. Brand.
Yes.
Brand, yes. Elkins.
Yes.
Elkins, yes. Hudella.
No.
Hudella, no. Cagle.
Yes.
Cagle, yes. Kraft.
Yes.
Kraft, yes. Murphy.
No.
Murphy, no. Norris.
Yes.
Norris, yes. Olson.
No.
Olson, no. Censor Mira.
Yes.
Censor Mira, yes. And Mr. Chair, we have 8 ayes and 4 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 4 nays, House File 1272 as amended is re-referred. Thank you very much, members. We will be back in this room Tuesday of next week, and please watch the House website, Transportation Committee website for the bills and other activities that we'll have next week, another full week as we move towards our bill deadline. So with that, members, have a very good weekend, and we are adjourned.